Welcome to episode 101 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. I bought a new lens recently, namely the EF 85mm f1.22, the second model or second version USM lens from Canon. And when the guy I paid in the shop was finishing off the conversation and everything, he said to me, I can bring it back for anything up to 2 weeks if I find anything wrong with it. So I thought I'd do a few tests and make sure that it lives up to my, not so much up to my expectations, because I guess I've already made the decision that I'm going to buy the lens. They wouldn't take it back unless there was something wrong with it. But there are sometimes things wrong with lenses, although I've never hit one of these myself. So I decided to do some tests just to make sure that everything is in order. And today I'm going to share some of the details of the test that I made to make sure that everything was fine before the grace period to take it back runs out. Before we go on though, a quick word shouldn't really do it justice, but I want to say a huge thank you to all of you that mailed and posted in the forum congratulating me, or us really, on the 100th episode last week. Also, a totally humongous thanks to all of you that posted images with congratulations in, sort of intermingled and worked into the image somehow, into the members' galleries. I was totally blown away by this and really quite moved by all the trouble that you went to either photograph something that you'd sort of made yourself, or to manipulate an image in some way to include the text, and often sort of thanks for the podcast. You guys really are the best, and thanks very much. And a special thanks to Robin Kelly too, as I hear it was you that sparked this wonderful idea. So thanks a million, mate. A few weeks ago, I mentioned that I'd made a mistake in picking up a Canon EF, 50mm f1.2L lens in the store, and I was sort of really taken back by its wonderful bokeh, which is the out of focus area of the image. Well, I started to check around and see if this lens really was as good as it seemed just by looking at the images on the LCD. And it turns out that in general, everyone that has bought this lens is very, very happy with it. There are a few issues that I saw in multiple posts around the internet. I don't have first information on this, but I read many reports that it has a pretty bad fringing and chromatic aberration when shooting wide open. And when shooting closer objects, things that are closer than 3 feet or so, there are also some focusing issues. I'm not going to go into details. As I say, I don't have first-hand information on this, and I don't want to sort of say too much, but the comments were enough to put me off the lens, especially because one of the main reasons that I want a lens with this wide an aperture is so that I can shoot objects close up, close to the minimum focus distance, and just have a really, really shallow depth of field at that point. Most of you will know that I like that really sort of dreamy effect that shots get when they have oodles of background and often foreground bokeh. So I rekindled the interest that I've had for the 85mm f1.2 version 2 lens that was released from Canon last year as an update to their most popular portrait and fashion photography lens. I'd had an opportunity to play with one of these for a while back, and it had really blown me away. But I'd kind of just put it to the back burner for a while I was sort of getting enough money by to buy the 1DS Mark III when it came out. And now that's done, and I'm just about through all of that. We're just waiting now. I figured that I could also splash out on one of the other things that was on the top of the list. The other thing is the 300mm f/2.8, but I think that's a little way away yet. I've got a while to go before I'll be able to add that to the arsenal as well. So anyway, I decided to take the plunge and I picked up an 85mm f/1.2 on last Friday. As I said in the intro, the guy in the store had said that, you know, as I paid for the lens, that I could take it back for up to 2 weeks if there was anything wrong with the lens. In the past, I generally just sort of buy lenses and then take them straight into the field and use them, you know, straight away to see if there are any issues. I did take a few shots on Friday night that we'll look at later. But I figured that with this lens having such a shallow depth of field when used wide open, I'd do some tests, you know, just to make sure that it was focusing as expected. Because there's really no room for error in when you're working with depth of field this shallow. I'd not done this in any real structured way before, but I did a search on the web and found a document published by a guy called Tim Jackson, and he's basically put together a back and front focusing test chart. As one of the problems with the 50mm f/1.2 was back focusing when shooting up close, I figured that this would be a good test to put my mind at rest that I'd not got a duff lens or that there was not something there sort of hidden in the bushes that nobody had mentioned in the forums. I'll put a link to the page where you can download the document into the show notes in case you're interested in trying this out yourself. Before I go on, though, I have to say that it seems that the version of the test that I used is now outdated. In the one that I used, the last few pages of the document are, one of them is a page that makes a base, when printed, that is, obviously, it makes a base that has the measurements for the test on, and another page that you print out has like a cutout of a focus target. The new test that I found while preparing to talk about this one, this podcast, has no focus target. It's basically just a single page that you can just lay down on a flat surface and shoot from an angle of 45 degrees. I didn't bother to redo my tests, as the results that I got were good with the old test, and I'd already shot a number of images with the lens, and I was relatively confident. And I did a few other tests as well yesterday that we'll look into in a moment. But basically, I'm happy enough with the lens. I'm not going to redo the test just now. But you know, I think that definitely if I do this test for any future lens, I'll definitely print out the new version. The one problem that I did find with the test that I used, the older one, is that having printed the chart out on relatively flimsy A4 paper, it sagged pretty badly when I'd sort of blue tacked it onto a closet door, and so it took some stretching to sort of get it to stay up the way I wanted it to, and a little bit of messing around there to get good results. I was going to suggest that you use stiffer paper for your tests, but really, the new test looks more reliable, and so now I know that it's there. I'd just say download that and forget about the one that I'm going to show you. But generally, the idea is the same, so hopefully this will still be useful. With this, the new test being a single page too, I'd be more inclined to print it out on high gloss photo, good quality photo paper, to get some really crisp black lines, because I can just then file that paper away. It's flat, right? And just file it away for reuse in future tests. With the test that I did yesterday, I wasn't so sure that it was going to be that useful a test before I started. Turns out it was. I really didn't want to try to find a place for something that had a stand-up sort of, focus target on there. So as you'll see, it's relatively large, so I didn't want to try and find somewhere to keep that. So my idea from the start was that I'd just sort of stick it all together, do the test, and then sort of scrumple it up and throw it away, and that's what I did. Anyway, the test was relatively easy to do. I'm not going to upload my resulting images to my gallery, and so that we can, you know, we can search for them by number. So what I'll do is I'll put them into the audio files. So if you look about now, you'll be able to see the test shot of the, you know, of the first test that I did. And I'll also put it into a forum post that I'll sort of link into the show notes. So you should be able to get a look at these images at some point in, you know, whichever way suits you. You can see in the image that, you know, basically once you've cut out the focus target, you paste it together and then paste it to exactly the right place on the base page. You have a target that sticks out from the page at 45 degrees, and you have to stick the whole thing sort of horizontally on a door, so that you know, basically then, you know, you can shoot it from the side with your camera. What you have to do is line up a line in the middle of the focus panel, it's called, it says, the focus panel, and then you know you line that up with a line on the back, on the base of the page, and that then makes sure that you are at 45 degrees to that target. And, you know, basically it's pretty easy, a little bit fiddly to do, and like I say, getting the thing sort of up there on the closet door was a bit of a pain. So definitely the new system, where you just sort of print it out, as I say, preferably on good high quality paper for nice crisp lines, and then just sort of drop it down, you know, lay it down on a flat surface, and then you sort of put your camera at 45 degrees to that. That's obviously going to be a lot easier to do, and you can reuse the target more easily. You then set your lens aperture to the widest possible, because this allows you to see the effects the easiest, and then focus using only the center focus point and shoot your test shot. And really that's it. You might find that if things aren't quite what you expected, it may be because of the angle of the shot, things like that, but generally that will be pretty obvious. And if you can't get it right after sort of taking a few chances, then there is a good chance that there's something wrong with your lens, which is obviously the reason that you're doing the, you know, all of these tests in the first place. So what I'll do is I'll link a resized version of my test to the post, and it's the same shot that's in the audio right now. But then I'll link that to an image of the full-sized version. So, you know, when I say that, I mean the forum post. I'll link that to a full-sized version so that you can actually open that up on your computer and look at it at 100% to see the details yourself. I found that the focus was pretty much spot on, but there are some areas where the lines either side of the one that I, you know, that is supposed to be the sharpest, are actually focused a little bit sharper. Basically, this is due to the sagging paper. The reason that I think that is because, you know, I reckon I was sort of looking down or up slightly at the chart, probably down, because you know, it runs out slightly to the back at the top and slightly to the front at the bottom. If it ran out to the back at the top and the bottom, obviously, then I've got a problem. But it was kind of balanced out, so I'm thinking that I'm okay, because it's, you know, it's basically, like I say, it's the same amount out at the top at the bottom, but in the opposite directions. I wasn't too worried about correcting this. On the whole, the results show that my lens not front or back focusing, so I'm happy enough. I read on Tim's website that there have been a lot of people that have panned this test as being unreliable, etc. And Tim has a number of explanations as to why these claims are unfounded. And I personally, you know, I think I agree with what Tim's written. But also, you know, I really don't care to get into this sort of discussion myself. You know, the test seems good enough for me. And the new version is probably even better. And I'm not trying to do rocket science here. I'm just giving myself some peace of mind that the expensive glass that I've just bought is performing as it should. And I've done that. So, you know, I doubt that he's listening. But thanks to Tim anyway for going to the trouble to think of a way to test this. and for maintaining and updating the test. It all takes effort, so thanks for your generosity. So after that, I decided while I was at it that I'd do a test just to make sure, I'd heard that this lens was going to be sharp, wide open, which is not always the case. And so I decided to do a test to sort of check the resolution of my lens by shooting a test card head on. For this, I used what appears to be an old video test card that I found a while back. It's the EIA 1956. And I don't know if this 1956 is the year that the chart was made, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if it was. I'm sure that there are other great charts out there, and if anyone knows of any, please do post a link in the forum, that I'll create on the MBP podcast forum at martinbaileyphotography.com. I use this particular chart myself, as I already have a nice high-quality printout of one on great glossy paper, so I just have to sort of whip it out and stick it on the wall and shoot my test shots. Also, as I said, I'm not really that worried about my tests from a rocket science perspective. All I want to do is just to make sure that it looks good. And I can tell that by looking at some shots of this page. So I'm just not really bothered to look into this much more myself. So anyway, I'll drop a link to the EIA 1956 chart into the show notes as well, or a page from where you can get it, and I'll put that into the forum post so you can grab your own copy if you want to try this. I should note, I guess, that when I print this out from a PDF using my Pictorico high gloss paper and the necessary profile, it comes out like an olive green color in a lot of the... Now, most of the blacks are black, but although the PDF seems to be in black and white, it comes out in like an olive green color. And again, I'm not too worried about this, but I don't know if this is how it should be. If anyone does know, actually, let us know. But again, you know, not rocket science. I'm not too worried about this. What I was trying to do here, basically, is just see how sharp the lens is when wide open, as I said. So, you know, you may have heard me say in the past how much I love the Canon EF 50mm f1.4 lens. But I have to say that this lens is really just, almost too soft at f1.4, you know, wide open, to be able to use it at that aperture, unless of course you're after that whole sort of soft effect, that it's not just sort of beautiful bokeh, but you know, everything, even the main subject is going to be relatively soft. So if that's what you're after, that's great, but I generally want a little more sharpness than that in my main subject. Well, the main reason that I was interested in the 85mm f1.2 is, as I say, Canon claims that this lens is sharp wide open. I also saw some similar claims from people that had posted comments around the internet while I was looking into this. So, you know, this is really what I wanted to prove to myself, that this is as sharp as it's supposed to be, even at f1.2. And, basically I wasn't disappointed, as we'll see. To shoot the test card, I basically, once again, I just blue tacked it up to the closet door and then made sure that my camera was directly in front of the card. It doesn't need to be absolutely perfect, but with the very narrow depth of field wide open, it needs to be relatively close. To check the height, I used a tape measure and, just basically measured to the center of the lens. Actually, no, I measured it the other way around. Because the chart was already on the door, I measured to that weird bullseye sort of thing in the center of the chart, and then just adjusted the height of my camera so that the center of the lens came to the same height. And that way, I know that I'm looking at it at least from the same height. And the whether it's at 90 degrees exactly, I'm not sure, but it's not as difficult to see that. You can stand in front, and as you start to line the lens, through the viewfinder, you start to line up at the chart, you can see that it's pointing at it from a pretty close sort of angle to 90 degrees. So it's not as difficult. But again, it's not going to be really exactly spot on unless you start to do some fine tuning, or real sort of, you know, getting hooked into it and start to put things like planks of wood across and stuff like that, and making sure that it's all at right angles. I'm not into that. I'm not that worried. You can see if it's straight when you take a test shot. So I basically just try to get it as close as I can by eye, and only really measuring the height of the lens, you know, the center of the lens, to make sure that it's the center, the same as the center of the target. I should note too that to focus on this chart, I selected all of the focus points and not just the center one as in the last test. I just find that the focus works better with this chart if you give it, give the camera's focusing system more to latch onto than that psychedelic bullseye. So you can see what I'm talking about though. I've put the chart up now. If you're listening to the enhanced version of the podcast, you'll be able to see the chart on your iPod now or in iTunes. You can also just sort of whiz through them if you're listening to the MP3, but it's not as easy, so I'm not going to go into details about that. Basically though, again, I'm going to add this one. What I've done is I've put together like an animated GIF or GIF file that I'm going to put into the forum post as well. And that's going to allow me to show you, not the reason that I've animated it is so that I can sort of series through the images, and it's going to allow me to show you something else that I'm going to go into in a moment. Now, the GIF file will only be, I think, 700 pixels wide. So obviously you're not going to be able to see the details. So what I'm going to do is I'll zip up the rest of the full-sized images. It's around 17 megabytes, so you know it's a lot to sort of drag away. But I'm going to zip that up and put that link to that in the post as well, so that you can download the images and take a look at all the files that I shot. And the first thing you'll notice is that the shots are a little bit dark. I use center-weighted metering, and I'd basically metered from the center of the image, which is mainly the card, which is quite a lot of white. So it's a little bit underexposed, but again, not rocket science, and I wasn't too worried about compensating here. The interesting thing, though, and this is why I've put an animated GIF up there, or I'm going to, is that when you move quickly through the images, it's surprising how much vignetting we see with the lens from f1.2 to f2. You can also, if you're going to do this with the full-size images, you can just sort of put them all into one folder and then zip through them, or you know, maybe load them into Lightroom or something like that, and you'll be able to sort of series through them yourself. But it'll give you pretty much the same, as far as looking at the vignetting is concerned, it'll give you pretty much the same sort of thing as you'll see from the animated GIF that I'll put up. The vignetting is not very concerning at all. It's nice and smooth and will be almost unnoticeable unless comparing shots like we are here. But at F1.2 and F1.4, the first two images that I shot, the very center of the image is pretty normal. But then from the outside, you know, from really quite close to the center, it starts to get considerably darker than the other shots. At F2, it's still quite noticeable, and then it sort of goes away after that. It's not vignetting in the sense that the edges have gone totally black. You know, there's no lines like when you have too many filters on or something like that. But it's more like, you know, what you'll see on a lot of old film cameras, you know, when lenses weren't quite, as wide, as big as they are now. It's surprising with the size of this lens that it's got that. But I reckon, you know, when we're talking about dragging in so much light as this 85mm has to do, then I guess it just gets a bit crowded around the edges. So, and again, like I say, it's not only not worrying, it's probably actually adds quite a nice effect. So I'm not going to think about this as a negative thing. So anyway, I've included from the F1.2 image right the way up through to f16, which is the minimum, the smallest aperture for this lens. And I've done that in full stops. Obviously, though, f1.2 is only a third of a stop down from f1.4, which is the next full stop. So after that, we have there's just a third of a stop, a gap there. After that, we have f2, f2.8, 5.6, 8, 11, and 16. And you'll see that from f2.8 onwards, the shadowing's not there, or the vignetting is not there. Anyway, on to the main thing that I really wanted to look at, and that was just how sharp this lens is at f1.2. And I have to tell you that I knew this was going to be good, but it far surpassed my expectations. Even wide open at f1.2, the image is just incredibly sharp. If anything, there's perhaps a little bit of chromatic aberration up to f2.8. Not so much the sharpness, but there's a tiny sort of pink fringe that I can see on the lines. And, you know, to be honest, I need to go back to the raw images and make sure that this was there, because I didn't really notice it until I've just sort of, you know, really got up close to these shots. I'm looking at them in preparation for this. I'm looking at them on a Mac, and my PC's powered down now. So I want to check this. If I don't see this in the raw images, then I'll make a note of this in the forum. But in the shots that I'm looking at right now, there's a very slight amount of sort of pink fringing in the first few images. Really sharp, though, still, and probably not even noticeable in most shots. From f4, you know, the sharpness is 100% perfect. Until that, very, very slightly soft, but just, you know, so sharp compared to the f1.4, for example. So, you know, the test sort of proved that I can be as happy, and I can use this lens wide open without worrying about, you know, getting things that are too soft. From, like I say, up to f4 or so, maybe just, you know, just a tiny amount of fringe in there. Again, I'll check that. But from 5.6 upwards, everything just tightens up even more, and it's just an amazing lens. So I've got no complaints across the board. Take a look at the f1.2 full-size image that I'll put into the post. As I say, I'll zip them all up so that you can just download them and take a look. Actually, no, what I'll do is because the zip file is going to be pretty big, right? So to save downloads, if all you want to see is the f1.2 full-size, I'll link that to the post as well in some way, probably to the first example image. And then I'll allow you to take that sort of straight from there, or enable you to take that straight from there. And then, you know, the zip file will contain that and all of the rest if you're really interested in seeing the whole series. So you're probably wondering how this lens fares in the real world. So let's take a look at a couple of shots from last Friday night. And the first one is image number 1518 in my online gallery. Remember that you can see the images in iTunes or on my podcast page, or jump straight to this image by punching in the number into the field that you'll find in the podcast pull-down menu at martinbaileyphotography.com, and then hitting the button or the enter key on your keyboard. Although I'll be using this lens in my usual nature photography, you can't buy a lens that's suited for portrait work and not shoot portraits with it. So here we can see Yuji. This is actually my other half's nephew, who was in Tokyo last weekend and stopped over with us on Friday night. And here we were in a very sort of dark pub having something to eat and some drinks. And I asked him if I could photograph him a little, and he obviously obliged. And as it was so dark, I obviously no flash, I upped the ISO to 800, opened the aperture up to f1.4 and set the shutter speed to 1/40th of a second, and shot a handful of images. At a 40th of a second, you know, that's pretty fast for how dark it was. There was really not a lot of light, a very moody, dark sort of establishment, I want to say. And obviously, this lens is letting in, it's allowing a lot of light in, even at, I had to use 800 ISO, but it's letting a lot of light in with that sort of size aperture. I'm pretty pleased with the results. Well, very pleased with the results, I should say. I had, of course, focused on the eyes, and the detail is just incredible. You know, just very slightly grainy because of the high ISO, but totally acceptable. And, you know, that's why I decided to actually upload these shots to my my main gallery in the portrait gallery. The second image is number 1519, and this time we can see Yuji's eyes with a nice sort of catchlight, and again, very, very sharp. This was shot with exactly the same settings as the last, so the depth of field is very shallow because of the f1.4 aperture. I focused on his left eye, or the right eye as in the shot as we look at it. When viewed at 100%, even with the slight grain of the eye, the high ISO, again, it really just blew me away. Yuji was moving around all the time while I was shooting him, though, and I'd had a few beers, so I imagine the sharpness could be even better with, say, lower ISO and a steadier hand. Notice, too, that the background is pretty much totally out of focus. This is because, of the wide aperture. Normally, as the subject moves away from you, you know, as the distance becomes greater, you have much more of a job getting the background out of focus, even at very wide apertures. So this is where this lens really just sort of comes into its own, even with a relatively large amount of distance between you and the subject. You can still get a lot of background blur there. So it's just great for this sort of work. We can sort of make out shapes in that background blur there. It was actually an open kitchen door, but it's just blurred enough, so blurred that we can't really see what it is, and it doesn't really detract from the main subject at all. It's just a bunch of large blotches of colour and light. In general, I'm very, very happy with the lens, and I can't wait to really sort of use it out in the field. Just to recap, my main reason for doing these tests was to ensure that I didn't have a duff lens. The other thing is that this is the first f1.2 lens that I've bought, and I really wanted to see if it was as sharp, wide open as I'd expected. I don't think I would have been able to have taken it back even if it wasn't. I would really sort of have had to have, you know, gone back with evidence of front or back focusing, or just a plain faulty lens in some way, for them to just sort of take it back during that 2 weeks. But I would have, at least having done the test, been able to prove that it was doing that, at least to the point where they would probably take it and do some tests themselves. Because a lot of these lenses are not something that you can do very easily, and I'm sure they wouldn't trust my images to prove that it was front or back focusing. But at least it would be easier to tell them and sort of show them, with printed out images or the digital images, what I was getting in my tests. But there's nothing wrong with it. I'm happy, happy as happy can be, to be honest. One of the things that I was thinking is that I'll probably start to do this with all new lenses as I buy them now, and I'd not really thought to do it in the past, but this one comment about taking it back within the 2 weeks sort of sparked it all off. When I do have some new additions to my arsenal of lenses, I'll definitely use the new version of Tim Jackson's front and back focus test. And I will probably still keep my old EIA 1956 test chart. I think, like I say, video test chart. But if anyone does have any charts that are freely available on the internet, freely available for download, then by all means sort of point them out. And if they look as though they'll do a better job of the ones that I'm using, then I'll definitely switch over to that one as well. It'll probably be a good idea for you to check the forum thread that will probably follow, it'll start to grow following this podcast. Check that for any new ideas and feedback before you do any tests of your own. So really this podcast is just a primer. It's a start of probably a few other ideas as well. If you do decide to do tests for lenses that you buy or already own, remember that if it's a zoom lens, you need to perform these tests at various focal lengths as well. I just did mine at 85mm, obviously, because it's a prime lens. But if you were to pick up, say, a 70 to 200mm lens, you'd probably want to do the test in three or five stages. I'd say that one at 70 and 200 is the obvious sort of no-brainer. The very shortest and longest focal length of that lens. And then I would probably like to see one at around 135. If you only want to do three, then, you know, three sets, because remember that you're going to want to go through the apertures as well. But if you only want to do three sets, then 70, 135 and 200 would work. And if you want to do, you know, if your patience holds out and you can do a few more, then I would say that adding 100 and 175 would sort of break that up nicely into five stages, and you'd get a really good idea then of how your lens performs at all of these focal lengths. Some lenses don't perform great across the whole, the zoom lenses that is, of course, don't perform great across the whole range. A good example would be the 100 to 400 millimeters. A lot of people wouldn't like to admit this because it is, in general, an amazing lens. But it's definitely, when you get up close to 400, it's not the sharpest puppy in the basket. You know, it's so basically, you know, doing these sort of tests will give you a good idea of your own lenses, and there may be sort of variance between each lens. I wouldn't imagine it would be very great, but you know, anything that's manufactured like this could have slight variances. So, you know, just sort of get an idea of how your own lens is going to be performing at these various focal lengths will probably help you out in the field. As I said, I'm not really doing this, you know, 100%. It's relatively sort of ad hoc, or not so much ad hoc, but I'm not doing rocket science here. As I say, it's all just to really make sure that the things that, you know, the lenses that I have are working as I expect them to. Obviously, I've not done this for all of my lenses. I've done it a few times in the past, but, you know, only really when I've thought there might have been a problem. This time it was more preventative, just to make sure that I didn't have a problem. Before, it would have been much more difficult to take it back to the shop. So using your lenses in the field is always a good way to show up deficiencies too. So, you know, don't worry about this too much. I definitely won't be. You know, if there are problems, they'll show up in the field. And so, you know, I'm not going to be going, like I say, going back and doing this for all of my existing lenses. Just more of a preventative thing. So remember that the new assignment is now on as well, and the theme is documentary or photojournalism. So it's going to be a pretty tough one for me, because I'm not that not that big on that kind of photography. But one of the reasons that I chose it is to get me out of my comfort zone as well. Take a listen to episode 100 from last week, or check out the assignment forum at martinbaileyphotography.com for more details. Also, I wanted to mention once again, the Hokkaido workshop. I mentioned this the first time around a month ago, maybe a little bit more, on the Focus Ring podcast, and then again in the following Martin Bailey Photography podcast. But basically, I'm thinking of planning a trip to Hokkaido, which is the island at the northernmost part of Japan, for a winter wildlife and landscape workshop. What I want to do, I've had about 7 people contact me so far, but this number is probably not going to be enough to make it work. We'll need at least, I would say, 12, preferably up to 15, if we want to really make this work. The main reason for that is that we're going to be moving around by bus, and a small sort of like half-size bus that seats, comfortably seats 12 to 13, maybe up to 15 people, will be the best way for us to do this. But obviously, that's going to mean that we're going to have to pay out quite a lot, because the driver is with us for the whole week. It's like they spend their nights in the hotels with us. So we basically have to pay someone for the whole week, so that if there's not enough people, we just obviously aren't going to make enough money on the trip to warrant even paying the driver. So I'm looking for at least another, I would say, 8 people or so. And even then, I would imagine that not everyone that contacts me is going to go. So, really, the more the merrier. And if you are interested, just mail me, drop me a line saying, yes, I'm interested. No obligation at this point, but just sort of, yes, I'm interested, put me on the list. And that mail should go to workshop@martinbaileyphotography.com. It's probably going to be from around January the 28th, which is a Monday, so that will give you the weekend to actually get to Japan. And then it will run through to the 1st or 2nd of February, which is the following Friday or Saturday, respectively. We'll be seeing stellar eagles, white-tailed eagles, and of course the Japanese red-crowned cranes. There'll be wild deer and possibly other wildlife too. And, you know, Hokkaido is just a beautiful place in the winter, so... although it's extremely cold, it makes for some incredible winter landscape shots. So we'll definitely work in time for that too. I'll be providing interactive tuition throughout and make sure that it's not just the photographic chance of a lifetime, but also a real chance to improve on your photography no matter what your level. There's going to be things that try you here, and even the most advanced photographer, I'm sure, will gain from this. So, as I say, we need another about the same number again. So just keep on mailing me if you're interested. And if we have a realistic chance of making this happen, then I'll start to really put some time into the planning, and I'll start to put some instructions together on what the sort of things that you need. You're going to need stuff to protect you and your gear from the extreme weather. And I'll make sure that you get as much information as you need to get that before you come. There may be some things that I have to buy here, and what I'll do is I'll just let you all know what they are, and then we can break those out when we start. I'm thinking of the hand warmers that actually burn charcoal, because you can't bring the charcoal on the flights. So I would have to actually buy that, even for myself, buy that in Tokyo and then send it to the hotel that we'll stop at the first day, or the bus company, and sort of have them... bring it out to us. All of that though, loads of stuff to plan, and to be honest, I don't want to go too much into that until I know that that it's worth doing it. Basically, there's a lot of other stuff on my plate. If we've got enough people interested, that's great, we'll make it happen. So do mail me workshop@martinbaileyphotography.com if you're interested. And that's about it. So all that remains to be said is thanks for listening, and you have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.